It is Thursday, August 8th, 2013, and from the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. The 2013 Fayetteville Roots Festival is Thursday, August 22nd through Sunday the 25th. This festival of roots music, local food, and Ozark culture will feature over 35 performers, including the Del McCorry Band, Iris DeMent, Jerry Douglas, and others. Tickets and more information available at FayettevilleRoots.com. Ahead on Ozarks, Tawnytown is in the middle of its 115th Grape Festival. A lot of chickens, a lot of spaghetti, and a lot of rolls are coming out of the Parish Hall kitchen. Plus, Brendan O'Connell visits with me at the spot of some of his greatest inspiration for art, the Isles of Walmart. And in just a few minutes, we catch up with Roby Brock as he begins campaign 2014 coverage more than a year before Election Day. Yesterday, he spent the day with Congressman Tom Cotton as he launched his campaign bid against Senator Mark Pryor. Today, Roby is traveling with Senator Pryor. His report from the field ahead. But first, though the millage vote for Bentonville Public Schools has received much attention in the past few months, another area school district will also be asking area voters for a millage increase this fall. John Carnes, superintendent of West Fork Schools, says because of grants from the State Department of Education, now is an opportune time to ask for an increase to build needed expansions in that district.
We have applied for a partnership with the Arkansas Department of Education Facilities Division to build a new middle school PE facility, to add some classrooms and restrooms onto our middle school, as well as several other projects. And we were awarded a partnership from the state. The state was willing to pay 70% of the cost, which is approximately $1.4 million, is what the state's willing to give us to build those projects, again, which represents 70% of the cost. So we have to come up with other 30%, and so, you know, that's the reason we're asking for the millage increase.
According to Washington County records, district residents living in West Fork city limits pay 49.6 mils, meaning a home worth $100,000 would have an annual tax bill of about $990. If approved, the additional 2 mils would increase the tax bill by about $40 annually. Karn says he is receptive to the reality of asking residents for a higher property tax bill in this economic climate. He says the last time voters approved a millage increase was 10 years ago.
We've done a lot of additions and built a new elementary cafeteria last year, and we've been able to do all that without asking for any type of tax increase. But we're to the point now where, you know, these are two major projects. And like I said, the state's willing to pay for 70% of them. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for our district to take care of or address a couple serious needs at a relatively cheap price.
The millage election will take place September 17th at the Wenzel Community Center in downtown West Fork. Karn says between now and then, he and other district officials will be informing the public of the school district's need for the millage. The University of Arkansas announced a major gift this morning. Julian and Nina Stewart have made a $1 million donation to the College of Engineering, a portion of which will be used to establish an Access Arkansas scholarship within the Civil Engineering Department and to provide need-based support to at least 10 students each school year. The remainder of the gift will be used to establish a charitable gift annuity with the university listed as the beneficiary. The Stewarts are U of A alumni and have a track record of creating scholarships and fellowships with gifts to the university. Arvest Equipment Finance, a six-year-old division of Northwest Arkansas-based Arvest Bank, has been ranked among the 100 largest equipment finance and leasing companies in the U.S. The division was ranked by Monitor Daily, a publication of the leasing and finance industry. Its Monitor 100 ranking is published annually, and in the 2013 list, Arvest Equipment Finance was ranked at 99. For 2012, AEF's net assets grew by 2.4% over the previous year for a total of $123.5 million in loans and leases. For all the companies ranked in the Monitor 100, net assets totaled nearly $550 billion. The Northwest Arkansas Metro has again made its way onto a list of the country's top places. Forbes magazine yesterday ranked the four-county statistical area as the 28th best place in the country for business and careers. With both unemployment and cost of living below the national average, Forbes noted the presence of the University of Arkansas and business interests, such as the headquarters of Walmart in Bentonville and Tyson Foods in Springdale, as well as the entertainment options and amenities present throughout the area, as reasons for the ranking. As the baseball season winds down, so do the Northwest Arkansas Naturals. The Nats lost again last night, falling to the Corpus Christi Hooks 4-2 in Texas. Road play continues tonight in Corpus Christi. State health officials are warning Arkansans that the current heat wave could have troubling consequences for people who don't protect themselves from sweltering temperatures. Dr. Kaslow is an epidemiologist who works with the Arkansas Department of Health. He says area residents who overexert themselves outside in the middle of the day could become dehydrated.
Well, the first signs of dehydration can include headache, and just generally feeling a little bit less than you normally do, feeling crummy. But if those are ignored, you'll start having marked thirst. You may get nauseous. And at that point, we start talking about heat exhaustion.
After heat exhaustion, he says people can get confused and could be at risk for heat stroke. Heavy rain through last night caused flooding across northwest Arkansas, and areas in Benton County alone received as much as 10 inches of rain, prompting county officials to issue an emergency disaster declaration for the county. Cloudy, a 40% chance of showers or thunderstorms in northwest Arkansas tonight, 30% chance of rain in the Arkansas River Valley, lows in the lower 70s. Mostly sunny tomorrow, slight chance of showers in northwest Arkansas with highs around 90. Arkansas River Valley forecast tomorrow, highs in the mid-90s, heat index values as high as 102. And for tomorrow night, partly cloudy, slight chance of showers, lows from 69 to 74. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. It is 14 months till Election Day in November 2014, but already a Senate race is underway in Arkansas. Roby Brock is getting a firsthand look at this race. Yesterday, he spent some time with Tom Cotton, the Republican challenger. Today, he's on the trail with incumbent Democratic Senator Mark Pryor. Roby, how are you?
I'm good, Kyle.
Does this seem like the campaign season now?
I feel like we're already in full swing. I'm on Highway 70 in Lone Oak County at the local Exxon stop across from Emma's Furniture with Senator Pryor, just picking up a Coke at next door to the dairy bar. So, these guys are already hustling it around the state and working almost 24/7.
Wow, and with 14 months between now and then, there's going to be some money spent in that time.
I think we're going to see a record in terms of the amount of money that's spent. The 2010 Senate campaign between Bill Halter, Blanche Lincoln, and John Bozeman spent, by most estimates, about $17 million. I think we're going to see the $20 million mark here between the candidates, the political parties, and the outside special interest groups.
48 hours into the official campaign, do you see any themes developing that you think will run the course of the year in 2 months?
Yes, I think that you're going to see the Cotton campaign really try to hang Obamacare around Mark Pryor's neck. And Mark Pryor, every time I have seen him speak so far today and in some previous appearances this week, he has defended his vote for Obamacare, has said that he still supports it, but has mentioned some other reasons why he thinks that the law is working and will continue to work. And then I think you're going to see Pryor paint Cotton as too extreme. It highlights some of his votes on the farm bill, student loans, disaster relief, and basically say this guy may say he's conservative, but he's too conservative for even Arkansas.
Finally, when you start out a campaign, generally you try to go to places where you think you're going to have a warm audience. Tom Cotton went to Baxter County on his first day as an official candidate. That's a heavily Republican place. Are you seeing that play out?
I think so. I think he had nothing but kind of warm and receptive crowds on the places that he went where there are quite a few high concentration of conservative voters in certain areas of the state. He's down in southwest Arkansas today and some pockets of Republican friendliness in Hot Springs Village and Texarkana. And I think you're seeing Senator Pryor, too, visit with a lot of constituencies that he appeals to. He's a bridge builder. He's a consensus builder. And I just was with him this morning at the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce. It was a crowded room with nearly 100 business leaders from across the state asking a lot of questions, obviously a lot of familiarity with them and appreciation for the bipartisanship that he's brought to helping them solve some of their problems in the business world. We're off on our way right now to Remington Arms, where I'm sure the senator will find a way to put a gun in his hands for a good photo opportunity before the day's over.
One last question. The candidates are engaged. Big money seems to be engaged, the political parties. Do you get a sense that many voters are yet engaged?
I do not think that voters, other than the very hyper-partisan voters, are probably paying too much attention at this time. So I think you see Pryor and Cotner both probably appeal to some of their political bases early on, and then just make sure that that enthusiasm is there as we move, as you say, 14 months more into this campaign.
Roby Bronk is on the road today with Senator Mark Pryor. He spent the day on the road yesterday with Congressman Tom Cotton. They're facing each other in a race for the Senate in, as Roby just mentioned, 14 months. You can read more about it at talkbusiness.net. Roby, thanks so much for your time.
Next time on Ask Me Another, NPR's hour of puzzles, word games, and trivia, international chess grandmaster Maurice Ashley shares his game-winning strategy.
If they screw up, you go kill them immediately.
I feel like I'm talking to a spy half the time, and then I realize we're talking about chess.
Join the grandmaster and me, Ophira Eisenberg, next time on Ask Me Another, NPR's guiltiest and most puzzling pleasure.
Ask Me Another, Saturday morning at 11 on KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. Many artists have favorite subjects to paint. Still life, portraits, landscapes. For Brendan O'Connell, inspiration comes from a place many of us are familiar with.
This is the Walmart in Fayetteville, and I've been painting Walmart since 2004.
It's not just the stores all across the country, it's everything inside those stores that captures Brendan's eye. His Walmart series includes canvases swept with color, often the edges of the real world slightly muted. His paintings include studies on a shelf of Quaker Oats canisters, a row of Wonder Bread, or the back of a man examining a column twice his size of Utz potato chips.
I originally started the idea because I was painting about everyday American life or everyday activities. And then I followed someone out into the world to shop, and I kind of ended up getting stuck here.
His series of works from inside the walls of the world's largest retailer have attracted plenty of attention lately. He's been interviewed on NPR. The Boston Globe dubbed his popish stylings a Warhol of Walmart. The New Yorker profiled him earlier this year, and this spring he sat across the table from Stephen Colbert. This week he was in Northwest Arkansas, and not just at the Walmart on Mall Avenue in Fayetteville, to do some work with what's expected to be the largest art event in history, a project he's taking on with the help of at least 1 million school children. More about that in a few minutes. First, back to his time spent painting inside Walmarts. He's now welcomed in the retailer stores, though that hasn't always been the case.
You know, that's sort of been the evolution of the narrative. I went from being the guy who got thrown out for taking a picture of the cashier to now I can set up on any aisle in any store in America and just paint away, you know.
A documentary about his work inside Walmarts has been made. It's titled Blocking the Bread Aisle. Tuesday afternoon, he was standing on the edge of the produce section, and we drew a few glances, even a few stares, from some shoppers as Brendan talked about why he became fascinated with the shoppers of Walmart and what they were looking at for his series.
What's fascinating is that we have this reaction to man-made imagery. It wasn't until, you know, 500 years ago, the only man-made imagery anyone saw was the stained glass window at a church. And so if you think in 500 years, what we have done to the human retina, you get up in the morning, you brush your teeth with images from your toothpaste, you have your bowl of cereal, your coffee, and then you turn on the TV or you turn on your computer, and you have seen more man-made imagery before noon than people saw for decades.
Than, say, George Washington, perhaps on his lifetime.
In his lifetime, easily, before noon. So we have this visual richness that didn't exist previously, man-made visual richness.
Man-made visual richness can provide a wide breadth of color for a canvas, but for some it can also be an overwhelming amount to take in. A landscape of paste, picante, Elmer's glue, and Tide can make some people anxious, even cynical. Brendan O'Connell says he understands that.
I get that, and part of the Walmart series paintings is about freezing some of those moments, of freezing the blur of when I'm pushing a cart and I see the image out of the corner of my eye. And part of the thing that's interesting about the Walmart series is that I half the people who have bought these paintings never bought a piece of contemporary art before. And the other half had never been in a Walmart before. So we have this very democratic approach. And one museum curator said, you're going to have this painting that Alec Baldwin bought, but it might become a t-shirt that every Walmart employee wears. And that democratic approach to art.
His paintings in his Walmart series are framed around humans as often as they are products. His piece, simply titled Deli, catalogs one of those moments where he stops the blur. A woman rests her foot on the bottom of a shopping cart as she waits in front of the meat section. Around her, an impressionist view of the green and white tiled floor and an orange and red background of boxes. Another painting, Blonde with Yams, freezes a woman's consideration of a canned vegetable's ingredients. These paintings are presented without any sort of irony.
Nobody is buying an apple or a banana ironically. It's just happening. It just is. So I like the idea of, you know, just kind of capturing the sense of people interacting with the environment. The idea of irony is completely absent here. So it's only in a sort of snarky Eastern view of what Middle America is about do we get that sense of irony. And, you know, I love irony with the best of them, but I didn't want the series to be the basic punchline.
It's the everydayness of shopping that interests O'Connell. Walking into a Walmart with an easel and a palette offers almost an exponential opportunity for subject matter. He says, for an artist, that's a gold mine.
There's the famous story now of my mother being in my local Walmart and Meryl Streep was in line in front of her and a lady in a muumuu behind her. And, you know, there aren't many places on earth that sort of democratic approach to humanity is present. But Walmart is definitely one of these places.
And is that part of the attraction?
That is definitely the appeal. And also the idea of we're in this environment. And 150 years ago, Paris was the most metropolitan place on earth. And if I had an army of buyers over a month period, they couldn't have bought 1,000th of the goods you find in your local Walmart, which that is kind of astonishing just in terms of the muchness of things. And I just love seeing patterns and people and just the interaction. It's one of the last public spaces on earth where people are actually interacting with things before they consume or purchase them.
It is a similar everybody is included ideal that is the fuel for the EveryArtist.me project he's helping develop. Inspired in part by the idea that everybody is an artist and by the fact that when he was young, growing up in Georgia and later in Paris, able to tap into a support system that allowed him to develop his art when he was young, he's seeking artwork created by a million young people. In April 2012, Brendan and his friend Brett Kling helped fill a football field in Bentonville with art created in one single day. Guinness Book of World Records still recognizes the more than 8,400 pieces as a record for the largest number of artwork created on the same day. Now, Brendan O'Connell wants to engage at least 1 million kids producing their art.
I think our culture is in the moment of a creativity crisis. And if you go by the testing that they do for kids, where our kids are test lower on creativity than they did 20 years ago. And when you think of the amazing problems that are facing our culture, it's creativity that will be the source to resolving them. And I have a 10-year-old, I have a 7-year-old. For me, when I think about their future, the two skills that I feel the need to impart to them is the idea of creative thinking and collaboration. In this EveryArtist.me event is all about both creativity and collaboration.
Is there a link, do you think, between creativity and critical thinking?
Absolutely. You know, I think if you look at every, the quote we use in our, one of our bumpers is, the Stone Age didn't end because they ran out of stones. You know, the idea of creativity drives all innovation. If you look at any development in our society as a species, it came from alternative thinking. If everything was always the same, we'd still be with the stones. And so that's kind of the model for the future is how do we get kids to... The other example I have is most 30-year-olds spend more time, energy, and money on products and services that didn't exist when they were 20. So 10 years ago, it didn't exist. So I think my child will inherit a world that hasn't even been invented yet. And so it's our job as parents and educators to help that generation become creators of their future.
You can learn more about the EveryArtist.me event scheduled for November 21st at the website EveryArtist.me. You can see works of Brendan O'Connell at his website, BrendanO'Connell.com. He lives in the Atlanta area. He was in Northwest Arkansas earlier this week.
How many hot rolls do we make? How many hot rolls do you make in a night?
A night, about 2,800.
2,800?
2,800.
Thousands of hot rolls are just the appetizer when it comes to all the food available at the Taneytown Grape Festival. The 115th edition of the event is underway in Taneytown this week. And yesterday morning, the kitchen in the St. Joseph Parish Hall was full of chefs and volunteers by 8 o'clock. Roger Pinalto was standing on a footstool near the back of the kitchen, stirring a massive pot of spaghetti sauce.
90 gallons.
And so you're here stirring.
Stirring and stirring.
He'd already been on his feet stirring those 90 gallons for more than an hour, and he had a long time left to go at his post. This is not easy work.
No, it's not.
And how long will you be on that stool stirring?
Probably about another hour.
The Taneytown Festival is one of the single longest enduring annual traditions for miles. The first such event was held as a celebration by a newly arrived community of Italian immigrants to Northwest Arkansas in the late 19th century. Today's festival still includes a bocce ball tournament, recognition of the founders of the town, and what is a culinary standard for Taneytown, spaghetti and chicken.
The men used to go around to all the homes and ask for donations before the festival. Some people would give flour sacks for the tea towels. Some would give eggs to make the spaghetti, and other people would give live chickens.
Antoinette Pinalto was born in Taneytown and continues to help get the food ready for the festival.
And they'd have a coop in back of their pickups, and they would put these live chickens in, and that's how it started. And over the years, I think two or three times, we've tried the meatballs, and people wanted the spaghetti, the chicken, so we've always gone back to the chicken.
Yesterday morning, Antoinette Pinalto stepped outside the parish hall for just a few minutes to explain what's happening inside and what's been going on not just for the past week, but for more than 100 Augusts before this one, including making all that spaghetti sauce.
They started yesterday. They made a batch, which is 90 gallons. Today, they will make another 90 gallons. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, they make 90 gallons each day. That's 5 days at 90.
So
450.
450 gallons.
Yes. Yesterday and today's will be the extra sauce. Thursday, they'll make the sauce and use it Thursday night. Then if they need extra, they dip into Tuesday or Wednesday sauce. We put it in the walk-in.
When did the noodles start?
We make those in July. It takes 4 days.
There are many direct connections to the first Taneytown festivals, but there have been some changes, welcome changes. As much work as it takes now, preparations are still a bit easier in the 21st century.
Oh, yes. It's changed a lot. Back then, like I said, you know, they had to dress the chickens and cut them up and everything. I can remember my mother rolling out the spaghetti. She had these long, probably 4 foot long rolling pins that they used to roll it out and cut it all by hand. Now, of course, we have machines. We plug the machines in and run it through the machines. But then we served a few hundred each night. Now we serve thousands. So that's the difference.
Oh, wow. The carnival does attract thousands with the food, the free live music, the crowning of the queen, the grape stomp, and the carnival rides. Still others will travel miles to just take something back to a home kitchen.
The carnival opens at 4, but people can't, you know, all day long. They buy the dry spaghetti and take it home. We got people from Oklahoma and all over come in and buy boxes. They'll buy 20, 40, 60 bags of it and use it all year. And so we get rid of a lot of spaghetti that way. We call it the bazaar spaghetti because it's bagged. Then we have the dinner spaghettis that we cook here.
Whether you eat your spaghetti at the festival in Taneytown, take it home with you, or both, you can enjoy the Taneytown Grape Festival, the 115th Taneytown Grape Festival, through Saturday night in Taneytown on Highway 412. This is Ozarks at Large.
Yeah, that's our pan now.
It is Thursday, August 8th, 2013. With me, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Want to talk a little music?
I'm always ready to talk a little music.
I always feel like I'm faking you all out because it's a topic I know nothing about.
You say that. I think you're selling yourself short because you do know something about music.
I know how to listen to Kevin Kinder, our music writer for What's Up.
All right.
And he says that Corey Smith is going to be performing at the Rib Room in Fort Smith tonight.
All right.
And that we should know this. Because he's a good musician.
Okay.
He's a high school teacher turned touring musician. That's kind of fun. Has 6 studio albums and 1 live record, 2012's Live in Chattanooga. And he's headlining at 9 tonight. The opening act is the Dirty Guvnas.
How's that spelled?
I don't know where it came from. Okay. It's G-U-V apostrophe N-A-H-S.
Oh, okay. Guvnas.
And tickets are $20 at ribroom.com. Also, if you've somehow missed this, the Black Crows are coming to Northwest Arkansas. They will be at the Arkansas Music Pavilion on September 11th. Still in extension of their tour, Lay Down with Number 13.
All right.
Don't know what that means either, but tickets are on sale for $32 and up at 443-5600.
And you said Corey Smith was a high school teacher turned touring musician.
Mm-hmm.
You know who else? That Jimmy Driftwood.
Really?
Well, he wrote, you know, the song that the Grammy Award-winning song that Johnny Horton later took to number one, The Battle of New Orleans. Jimmy Driftwood actually wrote that as a history lesson for his high school students.
And this is why Christina and I believe that time does not fly for you.
But if you listen to the song, you can get it, right? Because he's telling about the War of 1812.
But you're always learning cool stuff, and that's why time doesn't fly for you.
There's a thin line between that and becoming Cliff Clavin. I understand that.
Well, we appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night, beginning at 10 p.m. On this Saturday edition of Shades of Jazz, I'll feature music from Christian McBride and Inside Straight, Steve Herberman, Todd Kuhlman, Chris Hunter, Jeff Lashway, and some music from Chip White as well. All this and more on the Saturday edition of Shades of Jazz, beginning at 10 p.m.
This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, August 8th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums. As schools across the area prepare to welcome students back this month, the thoughts of many turn to kids. In a few minutes, Christina Thomas takes us to the Skydive Sky Ranch to learn about the 4th annual Skydive for Kids event benefiting the Child Advocacy Center of Benton County on August 17th. But first, a few other nonprofit events that are taking place this month. Friday will be a cool summer prom night at the Fayetteville Town Center that benefits the Kendrick Fincher Hydration Foundation. Pig Suey Scramble Party Happy Hour and Silent Auction Reception will be at the Arkansas Alumni House on August 15th. You can register and learn more by going to ArkansasAlumni.org. The 20th annual Will Golf for Kids and 6th annual Color of Hope Gala benefiting Arkansas Children's Hospital is scheduled to take place the weekend of August 23rd. The golf tournament is during the day, the 23rd and 24th, at the Kingsdale Golf Complex in Bella Vista. The Color of Hope Gala, Saturday evening at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. The Memory Maker Triathlon will also take place that weekend. Saturday the 24th, runners, bikers, and swimmers will have two race options, an Olympic and sprint distance, to compete in the name of the Alzheimer's Association. Savor the Flavor is Monday, September 3rd at several different restaurants in downtown Fayetteville. The proceeds from Savor the Flavor go to the Washington Regionals Faith in Action.
Wolf Grohlke remembers his first time to skydive.
When the door opened, my mama didn't raise me to do this. It's nuts. I'm 10,000 feet off the ground. This is crazy. But I went ahead and put my foot out anyway, and when we left the airplane, I went from this absolute total terror to absolute jubilation in about 3 seconds. And during free fall, I didn't care if the parachute opened or not. That's how much fun it was.
After 29 jumps, Wolf decided he was a better pilot than a skydiver and is now the owner and operator of Skydive Sky Ranch in Siloam Springs. He has well over 13,000 hours flying skydivers and says the Sky Ranch has conducted close to 150,000 jumps in its 24 years. Now, Wolf really just enjoys watching others have fun.
Actually, it's just a blast. And the people you meet are from every walk of life. You can have an attorney and a concrete worker on the same load. And in the sky, they're just skydivers. They're not a doctor or attorney or a guy that lays bricks, it's a whole different. So you run into people from every walk of life with a common interest, and that's to have a whole lot of fun.
Beverly Engel wasn't even in the room when Wolf said that, but echoes that sentiment, saying that it seems to be on everyone's bucket list, whether a sous chef, an executive, or a law enforcement officer.
I mean, everybody, gets off and they go, oh, I want to do this again. I really have never seen so much exhilaration, and people just, they love it. And, it's on so many people's bucket list, and it's always so surprising to me every year to see the people who really, do this and want to do it.
Beverly is the executive director of the Child Advocacy Center of Benton County. This fourth annual Skydive for Kids event will benefit that organization. She says she got the idea for this event from similar ones conducted by CACs around the nation. Her board of directors was a little leery at first.
We have attorneys on the board about the liability, and they were really concerned. And but all of those things after talking with Wolf and assured us. And of course, there are things that people do have to sign. And no one under 18 can jump. We have so many young people who cannot wait. I mean, they are like, cannot wait till their 18th birthday so they can come jump. We've had family groups. Grandmothers, daughters, granddaughters jump, so it's been a really great event for us.
The way it works is that a person signs up to jump. Each skydiver is expected to raise $1,000 by asking coworkers or community members to donate to their jump. Beverly says it works out nicely for the organization because the heavy lifting is done by the volunteer jumpers. She gets to do the fun stuff, like talk to Wolf and plan the event. It's the individuals who are raising the money. With 30 jumpers last year, the CAC raised $40,000.
Our majority of our funding really does come from this community, which we love because these are our kids, and I feel like that people, Wolf can pick up the paper and see where someone's being arrested and go, oh my gosh, we had a part in that.
A bit about the Child Advocacy Center. It was founded in 2000 and does just what the name implies. Serves as an advocate for Benton County's children. If a phone call comes in to the Arkansas Police Hotline with allegations of child abuse, representatives of the CAC meet the child, connect with the family, with trained forensic interviewers for the children, Think Law & Order SVU. The week I met Beverly, the center conducted interviews with 30 children.
Our goal is that a child be only interviewed by one person. Before the CAC, they were interviewed by each, you know, maybe a couple people at the school if it happened, you know, disclosed there. They were being interviewed by each of these separate agencies. But at the CAC, those people are in an observation room. And the people that are involved in the investigation observe that interview by closed circuit. And so they can see the live interview taking place, you know, there.
They also have a medical staff so that if a child needs an exam or medical attention, they can get that in that same location. Last year, the CEAC saw 772 children, which really pulls at the heartstrings. Somehow, I got talked into skydiving for kids, and I wanted to meet who I'd be jumping with. See, the skydivers at the event typically jump tandem, attached to the front of an instructor who will be primarily working the parachute. I'll be fastened to Brad Barnett as I jump from the open door of a perfectly good Cessna 182 at 10,000 feet above Siloam Springs. Over 4,000 jumps later, Brad still remembers his first time.
Nervous, anxious, scared, but you have to have trust in the people around you that they know what they're doing. And that's kind of what I do here as a safety and training advisor, is I overlook the safety of all the gear, all the personnel, and as far as training is concerned, make sure that everybody knows what they're getting themselves into, and make sure that we're safe and we all come down and are able to do it again.
Beverly Engel with the CAC won't be jumping. She'll be on the ground watching with the public. Yep, the public is invited to bring lawn chairs and watch the jumpers as they ascend back down to solid ground.
You kind of learn where you can kind of see, you'll kind of watch the parachutes coming down and when they open, and you can see a lot of them like turning flips, and it's just really amazing. And then as they get closer, at first it's just a little dot, but yes, right over here by the, in the field, and they just come down into that field.
Lunch will be available for $5, and a performance by kids from the School of Rock will also take place. They say that in 24 years of business, the Sky Ranch has only had about a dozen people chicken out. Wish me luck. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
She's a good girl. Loves her mama, loves Jesus, in America too. She's a good girl, is crazy about Elvis, loves horses, and her boyfriend too. And it's a long day, living in Reseda, there's a freeway running through the yard. And I'm a bad boy, 'cause I don't even miss her. I'm a bad boy for breaking her heart.
This is Ozarks at Large. Sunday, August 18th, the National Youth Awards will be handed out in New York City. The awards are presented to outstanding work created by young artists. Several awards will be given to the Fort Smith-based Young Actors Guild for their production of Les Miserables that was held last summer. Missy Gibson directed that production at the Alma Performing Arts Center and is among those picking up an award later this month in New York. She's also with me on the phone. Missy, congratulations.
Thanks so much, Kyle.
Well, let's start off with the production itself. Les Miserables doesn't strike me as something that is easy to pull off. I don't care what theater company you are.
Right. Well, that was our exact same sentiment when we chose it. We were like, either this is going to go brilliantly or this is going to go very, very badly. And we had just had been at that point where we thought we needed to challenge the kids with a little bit more of a challenging material, emotionally challenging, physically challenging. We had done a lot of musicals that were, I mean, I call them kind of like the pop rock musicals, Grease and Footloose and Hairspray, and we'd done really good jobs with them, and the kids had excelled. But we had gotten to that point where we were like, we need to do something different. We need to see really where our boundaries lie. Do we have boundaries? What are these kids capable of? You know, what can we not give them, really? Because that's what we felt like. We just had so many talented kids. So I talked to our music director, Brenda Yelvington, and we had brainstormed, and Les Mis just seemed like, you know what, it's an awesome show. I've personally seen Les Mis 3 times, and just so well-written. And I was like, you know what, this would be a dream. This really could be a dream for us. So we did it. We jumped off that cliff.
And you said it could either go very well or very poorly. Obviously, it went very well. The awards you're picking up include Best Production, Your Best Direction, a couple of Best Supporting Actors, and perhaps the most telling one of all, Best Ensemble.
Yeah. Yes, that was really exciting. There were 54 young performers between the ages of 9 and 19 in the show. And what I think is so exciting about that outstanding ensemble is that every one of those kids can put that on their resume now. And, you know, we have a lot of kids that are going on. For example, Chad Burris, who is our Jean Valjean, he just recently was in Avenue Q at the Arkansas Repertory Theater. I mean, we do have kids that are going on to be art majors, whether it's music or theater, some want to be teachers. Some just like performing. They don't necessarily want to be on Broadway one day. But I love that they put that 2 months of intense work and preparation in, and they made it an amazing show. And then at the end of it, it's so nice to get a pat on your back, you know, especially from a large group of peers. We're actually in the Eastern Division of the awards. They have the United States broken up into a couple different divisions. And we're in the Eastern Division, so we're actually in the category with New York City theaters and New Jersey theaters. And, you know, the other 3 theaters that won in that category are all New York City-based theaters, and all their staff are Broadway performers. And for our kids, I don't know, I just think that's really lovely because you're down here in Arkansas, and it's real easy to kind of have that dream of, can I do this? Can I hang? And we can tell them over and over they're amazing. But when they get that award from a greater pool, and they're going up against theaters, like I said, that are in Manhattan, I don't know, it just becomes more valid. You know, it's kind of like your mom telling you over and over how lovely you are, and then you get your, you know, as a girl, you get your first boyfriend, he tells you you're lovely, and finally you're like, oh, I'm lovely. You know, it's all about that perspective, and they're just so excited, and so are we.
Well, you mentioned the others that won for Outstanding Production. They are Kids Theater, Edward R. Murrow High School, and Broadway mm-hmm. Training Center for their production of Little Night Music. Those are all in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know, Edward Murrow might be in Brooklyn, but it's all in New York City area. And, you know, I actually Googled their websites because I'm a nosy Rosie, and I was like, hey, what is going on here? And it's just so awesome. Like, I can't wait. Grant Harper, who won for Best Supporting Actor in a Musical for his role of Javert, he's going up to New York City with me. And I can't wait for us to sit and just talk to those people and for Grant to get to visit with those other young performers. And what an exciting connection. You know, you do this show for a couple months during the summer, but then you get this other experience tagged onto it. It's like, no, it's not over. You know, you did so amazing. Guess what? You get to come up here and just talk to all these people.
What can this mean going forward now for the Young Actors Guild? You have a nice thing you can put on brochures that...
Right. I don't know. That's a great question, Kyle, and I'm up for suggestions because what we hope it does is that maybe it makes people kind of stand up and say, who is this? Who are these people? What's the Young Actors Guild? What are they doing? And how can we help them? And so maybe in the way of support, you know, we, our kids don't pay to be in our shows. And it's very unique. But, for example, Les Mis, we spent $86,000 on that show because we had the Fort Smith Symphony. We rented a set from Music Theater Wichita. We had Broadway costumes. We had impeccable wigs designed by the wig master at Actors Theater of Louisville. I mean, it was just, it was an incredible production, but that all takes money. So what I hope is that it makes people kind of go, what is this treasure we have here in the River Valley? And what can we do to help nurture it and keep it alive? That's my true hope. But I also think that it inspires those kids. You know, it inspires them to say, you can do things. You can do great things if you put your mind to it and you work really hard and you believe in what you're doing. Because I'll be honest with you, that cast, we had our first read-through for Les Mis, you know, a couple years ago or a year and a half ago. And they came in for the read-through, and they got up. They sat in a circle around each other. And whenever their part came up, they stood up in the middle of the circle and sang their part. Hmm. Like, they had done so much work between getting cast and our first read-through. And, I mean, there were customers, like, just tears in their eyes. I mean, these are teenagers. And I don't know. That's just an amazing thing as an adult to watch kids experience that, you know. And it was a great experience for me, too. Selfishly, it was really cathartic for me as well. So,
should this change how some of us think about youth acting?
Right.
I mean, you know, I think there is sometimes the perception that, well, they should do, like you said, the productions that you mentioned, the more poppy ones, but there is a right. depth there that we don't realize in some of these young actors.
Oh, gosh. I can't even tell you. We did the scene at the end of the day, and that's where, you know, part of the ensemble were the beggars, and it's just all of them singing about how that you work the whole day, you break your back, and at the end of the day, you have nothing to show for it. You're still poor. You're still hungry. And what have you done that day that's really gotten you ahead? You're just surviving. But they all had stories that helped them tap into that. And it was incredible. I could even just get goosebumps thinking about it right now, just how their life stories connect to this musical that, you know, that's based on, you know, the French Revolution era. I mean, it's not technically the French Revolution, but, you know, it's based on that whole era. And that they can be in 2012 and connect to that and connect to what those people were going through just because everybody's got their story.
Missy Gibson directed the Youth Actors Guild production of Les Miserables last year at the Alma Performing Arts Center. The production will pick up 5 awards this month from the National Youth Awards in New York City. You can learn more at yagonline.org. Missy, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Kyle, for helping us with this.
This is Ozarks at Large for a Thursday evening, August 8th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums. If you have your calendar ready, get ready to pencil some things in because there is plenty happening between now and the end of the month, including a pair of astronomy programs in one night at Hobbs State Park. It's Saturday night. First, a program about the moon. A lecture begins at 7:30. The night viewing of the moon will last from 8:30 until 10. You'll be able to learn about lunar potholes, craters, rifts, and flatlands on the moon, as well as see some of the spots on the moon where early explorers walked and recorded images. That's beginning at 7:30 and lasting until 10 Saturday night at Hobbs State Park. Then at midnight, meteor shower. If the clouds stay away, you can expect to see perhaps as many as 60 meteors per hour. It's the height of the meteor shower, and that will last from midnight until 6, so technically Sunday morning at Hobbs State Park. On August 17th, a Saturday from 5 until 8, First United Methodist Church in Eureka Springs will have an ice cream social. Refreshments include homemade cookies and ice cream, live music from Arkansas Red and the Barbershop Singers. Donations will be accepted for the purchase of emergency medical equipment. On Sunday the 18th, local author and Fayetteville Public Library librarian Nancy Hartney will speak about and sign copies of her new book, Washed in the Water, Tales from the South. It takes place at the library Sunday afternoon, August 18th, beginning at 2. Washed in the Water, Tales from the South is described as offering vignettes of folks living the best they know how as they reach out for redemption. The stories are set between 1950 and 1980. Again, that takes place Sunday afternoon, August 18th at 2 o'clock at the Fayetteville Public Library. On August 20th, Ozark Poetry Slam's monthly event will take place in Fayetteville. The evening begins with an open mic and then the poetry competition. For details and competition rules, you can search for Ozark Poetry Slam on Facebook. You can also call 417-818-8748. The Fort Smith Public Library will have several free events throughout the month, including Harry Potter Week. It's all week long at all of the Fort Smith Library locations from August 26th through the 30th. For more information about that or any event that's at the Fort Smith Public Library, you can go to their webpage, fortsmithlibrary.org. You can also call them 783-0229. And the Fort Smith Area Community Foundation offers great opportunities for nonprofit organizations in Sebastian County. Through August 15th, nonprofit organizations in Sebastian County can submit applications for Giving Tree grants to the Fort Smith Area Community Foundation. If you'd like more information about the process, they have a website as well, arcf.org. You can also call 484-5150.
Why does the Golden Hall at the Musikverein in Vienna sound so good? Is it the hollow space underneath the stage? The exact proportions of the dimensions of the hall? Whatever the reasons, the acoustics are incredible. We'll go to the Golden Hall to hear Long Long play Chopin. I'm Fred Child. Join us for a musical trip to Vienna on Thursday's Performance Today from APM.
Performance Today, next on KUAF, beginning at 8 o'clock. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by Ozark Natural Foods, Northwest Arkansas's consumer-owned food co-op since 1971, offering local organic produce and all-natural groceries, bulk foods, health and wellness products, and a full-service deli. Ozark Natural Foods is located in the Evelyn Hills Shopping Center or on the web at ozarknaturalfoods.com. The Rogers Historical Museum presents Works in Wood, a folk art sampler, running now through September. This art and history exhibit features carved canes, toy wagons, furniture, and more. Located in historic downtown Rogers, 621-1154 or rogersarkansas.com/museum for more information. And don't forget, the 2013 Fayetteville Roots Festival will begin Thursday, August 22nd, and run through Sunday, the 25th. Our noon edition of Ozarks at Large on Friday, August 23rd, will once again be live from the Fayetteville Public Library and will include musicians that are playing at the Roots Festival. The festival is of roots music, local food, and Ozark culture, and will feature over 35 performers, including the Del McCrory Band, Iris DeMent, Jerry Douglas, and others. Tickets and more information available at FayettevilleRoots.com. And speaking of live broadcasts on KUAF, on Sunday of the Roots Festival, that's Sunday, August 25th, we'll again be live from the Fayetteville Public Library for a live presentation of Tales from the South. They are leaving their usual home of the Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta downtown district of North Little Rock and will be doing a live program here. You can learn more at the Fayetteville Public Library website, faylib.org. It will be a program that will then be broadcast after it's been edited and put together at its regular time slot, Saturday afternoons at 2:30. But you can hear live the stories, plus more musicians from the Fayetteville Roots Festival, all done live at the Fayetteville Public Library. It will air live August 25th. That's a Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock on KUAF. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Lincoln. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening this evening. Another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM. Performance Today, next.